Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I'm listening to your episodes, the recent ones, about digital preparedness, as I call it, and you call it. And we talked about networking and LoRa and, you know, using little USB-C travel routers to bring networking down. And what I love about this stuff, as you mentioned, is less is more. It's little steps that one can take, small things like power banks and cellular networks, but together they can actually really, you know, provide a very empowering solution to situations in which you lose connectivity. I want to take the topic in a slightly different direction today, and that is about electricity supply. We're talking about digital prepping. So I've owned UPSs for a number of years as a desktop user. They're good to have. We don't have terrible power in Israel, but during the winter, it depends where you live, I guess. I've definitely lived in rentals where power supply was a significant challenge. Who am I kidding? Even our current place, you can't turn on a Friday, which is before the Shabbat, when people are cooking, I guess. We can't turn on the dryer, the heater, and the air. There's like a combination of up to we can do. And these are very basic power supply issues, but they do happen here. So what's the UPS? It's nice. One thing I found for the desktop is, you know, it's kind of, I guess it's nice to have. I think the idea is that if you're doing really important work, you can close your stuff down and not lose it. But I think as people use more and more cloud computing, that it's less of a game changer. You know, it's going to save you so many times at the odd time if you do lose that, you know, the saving that draft of a Word document. I don't think anyone's going to be crying too much about it. But one very useful utility for UPSs is running networking gear. Networking gear, as I've discovered, is actually really low draw in general. Things like routers, which you assume, because they're doing so much heavy lifting at the network level, you'd assume they kind of have a high wattage, but they're actually very, very lightweight. And speaking of things that are lightweight, you can also run an E27 bulb for very little electricity these days. So in my tinkering ways with Home Assistant, I've created a nice automation because I have a UPS and I have a bunch of these Zigbee bulbs. I thought, why don't I just have an emergency light automation, which when the power goes out, the UPS will tell you that. You'll turn on the Zigbee bulb and you'll no longer be in the dark. What I'd like to ask you, Herman and Corn, is I've generally spec'd my UPS purchases. The one on the network, I have now one in my networking cabinet. It's an old desktop one. I've never really thought, because I know the batteries have to be replaced, could you get one that actually is not bought for keeping your computer online for a few minutes, but keeping with the idea of just having a big battery reservoir on hand, actually buy one for a few different things you might want to have at home, like keeping the network going, which, as I mentioned, you get a surprisingly high amount of value out of or duration out of that, far more often than you get out of keeping a computer going. Keeping a light or two going, and crucially, and most critically, keeping your phone going, because when you do wind up in a situation like this, cellular connectivity, once you've got your phone and your internet, if cellular goes down, usually that's 99% of the time, that's kind of your core stack for being not turning into a severe thing is. So what I'd like to know, Herman and Corin, is what I'm asking essentially is, can you use a UPS or a variant of a UPS as a sort of lightweight generator? right? We're not talking about that level of backup power whereby you're literally running a diesel generator on the roof or something, but a kind of more focusing on those relatively low draw appliances that if it came to it could actually be kept running for a decent amount of time. Now, again, I mentioned batteries because when I think about just, oh, let's just get a really big UPS with a big battery, I think now about the sustainability angle. And if that's a single-use product or a disposable product, I try to factor sustainability into all my tech purchasing decision-making for a long time now. And that's one that makes me uneasy because of the precious resource consumption, that the very high footprint that a lot of batteries have. So I leave you on that note. Kind of be done. Is there gear that is a UPS, but for not necessarily just a computer, but for a bunch of things at home? And how big can you go in sizing these out? And are there ones that, I mean, do batteries, we probably need to have a separate episode about how batteries work here, but are there batteries that can be easily replaced or that don't have that kind of short lifetime that makes me and others, I guess, a bit uneasy about using them? Herman and Corn, over to you.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem, looking at a very specific corner of the house that usually has about 5 different lights blinking at me.
And I am Herman Poppleberry, the man who installed most of those blinking lights and then spent 3 hours cable managing them so Corn wouldn't trip.
Which I appreciate, Herman. Truly. But you know who else has been looking at that corner? Our housemate Daniel. He actually sent us a voice memo this morning about that very setup. It seems our recent deep dives into networking and digital preparedness got him thinking about the literal foundation of all of it. Power.
It is the ultimate bottleneck, right? You can have the best router in the world, a mesh network that reaches the back garden, and a satellite link for backup, but if the electrons stop flowing, you are just left with a very expensive collection of plastic boxes.
Exactly. And Daniel was specifically asking about the humble, uninterruptible power supply, or UPS. He has been using them for his desktop and his networking gear, and he noticed something interesting. While a UPS might only keep a power-hungry gaming PC alive for 15 minutes, it seems to keep the router and some emergency lights going for hours.
That is the low-draw advantage. It is a completely different ballgame when you are talking about 10 watts versus 500 watts.
So the question he posed is, can we treat a UPS, or a variant of one, as a sort of lightweight generator? Can we scale this up? And importantly for Daniel, who is very conscious about the environment, are there options that do not involve throwing away a heavy lead-acid battery every 2 years?
This is such a timely topic for us specifically, Corn. I mean, we live in an older building in Jerusalem. We know the Friday afternoon struggle. Everyone is home, the ovens are on, the heaters are cranked up because it is January, and suddenly, the circuit breaker decides it has had enough.
Oh, I remember that one Friday where we were trying to record and the dryer kicked in at the same time as the air conditioning. Everything just went black.
And that is exactly where the UPS saved us. But Daniel is right to push the boundaries here. Most people think of a UPS as a bridge. You use it to save your work and shut down gracefully. But if you shift your perspective, you can see it as a reservoir, a small, silent, indoor-friendly power plant.
Let us start with the basics then. For those who might only know a UPS as that heavy black brick under their desk that beeps when the power flickers, what is actually happening inside that box?
At its simplest, a UPS is 3 components and a trench coat. You have a battery, a charger that keeps that battery topped up from the wall, and an inverter. The inverter is the magic part. It takes the direct current, or DC, from the battery and turns it back into the alternating current, or AC, that your electronics expect.
Right. And there are different types, right? I remember you telling me that not all inverters are created equal.
Definitely. This is a huge point for anyone looking to use these as mini generators. Most cheap UPS units use what we call a simulated sine wave or a modified square wave. It is a chunky, stepped version of electricity. It is fine for most power supplies and computers, but some sensitive motors or high-end audio gear really hate it. They want a pure sine wave, which is smooth and looks like a perfect rolling hill on an oscilloscope.
So if Daniel wants to run his networking gear and some lights, does he need that pure sine wave?
For a router? Usually not. Most of those use a little power brick that converts the AC back to DC anyway, so they are pretty forgiving.
But if he wants to run a high-end fan or some specific medical equipment, he would want to look for a pure sine wave unit.
Okay, so let us talk about the lightweight generator idea. Daniel mentioned using it for networking, lights, and phone charging. That is a very specific low-energy profile. How long can a standard UPS actually last on that kind of load?
Let us do some back-of-the-envelope math, because I know you love it when I get the calculator out. A standard, modern, entry-level portable power station in 2026 usually has a capacity of about 256 watt-hours.
Okay, 256 watt-hours. And our router uses, what? 10 watts?
Exactly. 10 watts for the router, maybe another 5 watts for a modern LED bulb. So you are drawing 15 watts. In a perfect world, that is 17 hours of power. But, and this is the big but, inverters are not 100% efficient. They lose energy as heat during the conversion. Usually, modern units are looking at about 90% efficiency. So you might get 15 hours of internet and light from a small portable unit.
That is actually more than enough for most local outages we see here. But Daniel asked how large these can get. If he wanted to survive a 24-hour outage, or even a weekend, what are his options?
This is where we cross the bridge from a traditional UPS into what the industry calls portable power stations, or sometimes solar generators. They are essentially massive UPS units. Instead of 200 watt-hours, you can get units that are 1,000, 2,000, or even 5,000 watt-hours.
5,000 watt-hours? That is huge! That is not a brick under your desk anymore.
No. At that point, it usually has wheels and a handle like a suitcase. But the principle is the same. The difference is the battery chemistry. This addresses Daniel's second point about sustainability and replacement.
Right, because the traditional UPS uses lead-acid batteries. The same stuff in a car battery. They are heavy, they do not like being drained completely, and they die if you leave them empty for too long.
Exactly. They are basically 19th century technology. If you want a generator-style experience, you have to look at lithium iron phosphate, or LIFEPO4. This is the gold standard right now.
I have heard you mention LIFEPO4 before. Why is that the winner for a home setup?
A few reasons. First, longevity. A lead-acid battery might give you 200 to 500 cycles before it loses significant capacity. A lithium iron phosphate battery can give you 3,000 to 5,000 cycles. If you used it every single day, it would still last you over 10 years.
That is a massive difference. So, it is more expensive up front, but you are not replacing it every 2 years.
Precisely. And they are much safer. They are very stable. They do not have the same thermal runaway risks as the lithium-ion batteries in your phone or laptop.
But Herman, Daniel specifically asked about sustainability. Is there anything even better than lithium?
Actually, yes. Just this month at CES 2026, we saw the rise of sodium-ion power stations. Sodium is everywhere. It is basically salt. These batteries do not use lithium, cobalt, or nickel. They are incredibly sustainable, and they work in extreme cold down to minus 40 degrees, which is great if you are in a place where the grid fails during a blizzard.
Sodium ion? That sounds like a game changer for the environment. Are they as heavy as the old Li bricks?
They are a bit heavier than lithium, but much lighter than lead. And they are safer because they are almost impossible to set on fire. For Daniel, who wants sustainability, sodium ion is the new frontier.
So, if Daniel gets one of these portable power stations, can he still use it like a UPS? Does it just sit between the wall and his gear?
Some can, and some cannot. This is a critical distinction. A true UPS has a very fast transfer time. When the power goes out, it switches to battery in less than 20 milliseconds. Your computer does not even notice. Most high-end portable power stations now have a 20 millisecond switchover, which is fine for a router or a desktop, but you have to check the box for UPS mode.
That is a really important detail. So if the goal is uninterruptible, you have to check the specs for that transfer time.
Exactly. But for Daniel's use case, keeping the essentials going, a slightly slower switch is a small price to pay for having 10 times the capacity.
Let us talk about the easily replaceable part of his question. One of the frustrations with modern tech is that the batteries are often glued in. Is that the case with these larger units?
It depends on the brand. While you can't usually swap the internal cells like a AA battery, the industry is moving toward modularity. Companies are now making stackable battery blocks. If your capacity drops after 10 years, you just buy a new battery module and click it onto the existing inverter brain. We also saw the first bio-based plastic housings this year, which reduces the carbon footprint of the box itself by 20%.
I want to go back to the low draw gear for a second. We talked about routers and lights. What about phone charging? People always worry about their phones during an outage.
Phone charging is incredibly efficient on these units, especially if you use the built-in USB ports. If you plug your phone charger into the AC outlet on a UPS, you are doing a double conversion. You are going from DC battery to AC wall power, and then your phone brick is going from AC back to DC. You lose a lot of energy in that process.
Oh, so if the power station has a USB-C port built in, you should just use that directly.
Absolutely. You can charge a smartphone dozens of times on even a small power station if you stay on the DC side. It is much more efficient.
That is a great tip. Now, Herman, let us address the size question. Daniel asked how large these can be. We mentioned the suitcase-sized ones, but is there a limit? Could someone run their whole house on this?
Technically, yes. You start getting into home backup territory. You are looking at things like the Tesla Powerwall 3 or the EcoFlow Delta Pro Ultra X. These are units that can be wired directly into your home's electrical panel. We are talking 30, 40, or even 180 kilowatt hours of storage.
180 kilowatt hours? That is huge.
It is enough to run a whole house for a week. And in 2026, these systems are becoming part of what we call virtual power plants.
Wait, I have heard that term. Is that where the utility company pays you?
Exactly. If you have a big battery at home, you can sign up for a program where the utility company borrows a little bit of your power during a heat wave to keep the grid from crashing. In some places, homeowners are earning over $250 a year in passive income just for letting their battery sit there.
That is fascinating. So my little backup unit could be part of the solution for the whole city.
We are moving toward a decentralized grid. It is the same thing we talked about with networking in episode 237. Moving away from one big central point of failure to a mesh of smaller, resilient nodes.
It all connects. The data, the hardware, and the electricity.
It really does. And I think Daniel's instinct to look for sustainable, replaceable options is where the whole industry is going.
So, if you had to give Daniel a getting started list for his lightweight generator project, what would it be?
First, audit your gear. Get a little kilowatt meter and see what your router and lights actually draw. Second, look for a unit with lithium iron phosphate or the new sodium ion chemistry. Do not buy lead acid in 2026. Third, make sure it has the outputs you need, specifically high wattage USB-C ports.
And what about the size?
For a Survive, the weekend setup for networking and lights, 500 to 1,000 watt hours is the sweet spot. It is portable, relatively affordable, and will give you a massive safety margin.
I think I am going to look into getting one of those for a recording setup too, just so we don't have another Friday afternoon disaster.
I have already been looking at a few models, Korn. Don't worry, I have a spreadsheet.
Of course you do. You know, it is interesting. We often think of preparedness as this intense prepper thing with bunkers and canned beans. But what Daniel is describing is really just digital comfort.
It is resilience. It is the ability to maintain your quality of life when things get a little sideways. Whether it is a storm, a grid failure, or just too many people in Jerusalem cooking at the same time, having your own reservoir of energy is a game changer.
It reminds me of what we talked about in episode 222 regarding data brokers and how much of our lives are online. If our digital selves are so important, we have to protect the physical infrastructure that keeps them accessible.
Exactly. No power, no internet, no internet, no digital self. You are basically back in the 1980s, which was great for music, but not so great for getting work done.
Hey, I like the 80s. But I do like having high-speed internet more.
Fair point.
Before we wrap up, I think we should mention that if you are doing this, you really need to be careful with the wiring. Herman, you always say, do not daisy chain.
Oh, absolutely. Do not plug a UPS into another UPS. Do not plug a power strip into a UPS and then fill it with 10 different things. You can cause a fire or just trip the internal breaker. Keep it simple. One unit, one set of essential gear.
Good advice. And hey, if you're listening and you have a setup like this, or if you have found a particularly good sustainable brand that Daniel should know about, let us know.
Yeah, we love hearing about the DIY setups too. Some people build their own using marine batteries and separate inverters. It is a bit more work, but it is the ultimate in replaceable parts.
That might be a bit much for Daniel, but it is good to know the option exists.
Actually, I think Daniel would love the DIY route if he had the time. Maybe that is a future project for the house.
One project at a time, Ehrman. I still haven't finished the smart mirror you started in October.
Hey, that is waiting on a specific part from overseas.
Likely story. Well, I think we have covered a lot of ground here, from the chemistry of the batteries to the physics of the inverters.
It is a deep rabbit hole, but a very practical one.
Definitely. And before we go, I just want to say, if you are enjoying these deep dives, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show.
It really does. We see every single one, and it makes the research hours feel worth it.
You can find all our past episodes and a way to get in touch at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We have the full RSS feed there for subscribers, too.
And thanks to Daniel for sending this in. It is a good reminder to look at the foundations of our tech.
Absolutely. Keep those prompts coming. We will be back next week with another one.
Until then, keep your batteries topped up and your curiosity high.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks for listening.
See you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Take care.
Oh, and Ehrman.
Yeah?
Don't think I didn't notice you trying to sneak that spreadsheet into my inbox already.
It is just for your reference, Korn. Purely educational.
Right. We will see about that.
It has graphs.
Goodbye, Ehrman.
Goodbye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.